It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Good morning. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Poverty should be a focus in Congress. Now, that message came earlier this month from the top House Republican, Speaker Paul Ryan. The speaker moderated a summit on the subject in South Carolina back on January 9th. Now, this is a theme often sounded by House Democrats. Congressman David Scott is a Democrat representing the 13th District in the Atlanta region. It covers much of the south and west sides of Metro Atlanta, and he joins us now from Washington. Congressman, welcome back.
Oh, good to be with you, Dennis. Always a pleasure.
Now, one of Speaker Ryan's key proposals here is to shift some of the major federal programs like food stamps away from direct federal administration or a direct federal pipeline to block grants, which would be given to states so they could administer their own programs. And the idea is this would be more efficient and reach more people that way.
We have to look at that part of the speaker's program with a very jaundiced eye. As one who served in the state legislature, 8 years in the House, 20 in the Senate, I'd like to look at that a little more closely. We've had some experiences where there has been some resistance, as you know, when federal dollars get down to the state level, and there is not the same objectives and stream of urgency that we intended it to be at the federal level. There is room there for us to work. Some states may work better than others, but there are some states that do not have a good history in terms of the block grant proposal. I think we have to make sure the accountability is there before we turn loose totally on block grants.
Isn't it possible that we could use the past experience of states perhaps not doing what the block grants were intended to do to improve monitoring by the feds of
Yes.
where the money is going and the outcomes of the programs at the state level?
That's right. And I think one of the features that Speaker Ryan has in here, and this is why I may say I have spoken to Speaker Ryan about this, and we are friends. We've traveled the world together. So what he has done, to your point, he set up a commission that would look at all of the data, the programs, and this would come under that commission, and the commission must report back to Congress. So what I'm saying is that Speaker Ryan, he's aware of all these things, and deep in his heart, I am convinced that he really wants to get to this where we can lay a framework and an infrastructure for dealing with poverty from what we can do here in Congress and what we can do at the state levels and coordinate better. But there are two glaring omissions here that we've got to address. The real driver of poverty over generations has been this growing breakdown of the family structure. For example, our data shows that the primary indicator for poverty is single women trying to raise children by themselves. And then those children grow up without the father in the home, without that nurturing. We've got to do something here in addressing poverty to restructure and rebuild the family structure. We've got to cut out this pipeline of young men going into the prisons. These are fathers who are going in. So the other feature about what the Speaker Ryan is doing, which I commend him on highly, is to revise and go in and reform our criminal justice system so that we can help, for example, low-risk, nonviolent offenders so that they can reenter society, rebuild their families. And what our proposal will do is we will revise and review and restructure mandatory minimum sentencing guidelines. And then we couple that with enrollment in a rehabilitation program. And we couple that with an earned time credit system in the federal prison system itself. Then the other thing is this, as I talk with the speaker, all of what we're doing, dealing with these federal and government programs, the state and the federal government can do just so much in the public sector. The economy, it is the private economy. That's the job creator. It's like a wheel, and we've got to get these targeted groups of particularly young men into the wheel as we rebuild the infrastructure in America. And so I've asked Speaker Ryan to work with me on my bill, which is a job training bill, an earn as you learn bill. That's what we have to recapture. And my bill targets, goes right at the hardest hit, which are African-American young men. You want to do something about poverty? We got to get these African young men jobs so they can be in the homes raising their children and not with this pipeline to jail. We got to get the private sector involved in this in a way that helps us with that problem and get those men who are fathering the children back into the homes so they can help raise them.
Another of the speaker's ideas is to expand the earned income tax credit. Is that something that you and other Democrats can work with Republicans to do?
Absolutely. That is a brilliant idea, and I told him so. Because what it will do is, as you know, if you don't have children, you can't get the earned income tax credit. But under Speaker's bill, and you got to give him a pat on the back for this, the earned income tax credit will be expanded to those workers who do not have children. This is a beginning. It has to be a partnership with our state and local governments, but we also have to put in there certain monitoring and certain partnership ways in which we can make sure the accountability is there. And I think it's something that both Democrats and Republicans can certainly work on.
Let me ask you a political question about all this. Over the years, I have heard you occasionally express a frustration that Democrats take poor and minority voters for granted. Now, is the Speaker's initiative a sign to you that some Republicans see both a need to reach those voters because of changing demographics and an opportunity because they may feel the Democrats have taken those voters for granted?
Well, I think it could be a combination of both. I work with both Democrats and Republicans. I think Republicans, as I thought, they understand that the demographics are changing, and they've got to reach a more diverse group of people. And that's a good thing. Who would have thought that a Republican Speaker of the House would be leading the charge and putting forward some very good that Democrats and Republicans can work together on? And the fulcrum of a free democracy is that C word, compromise. And Ryan understands that. And I can't thank him enough for moving in this direction. And I think it's good for Republicans, and I think it's good for Democrats. And you have both of them on board here, and this is how you get things done.
Bringing it to Georgia for a moment, I spoke with Governor Deal recently about the possibility of finding some sort of third way for, if not Medicaid expansion, something that would give more or open up more federal money through Medicaid to rural hospitals, for instance, in Georgia. As you know, Governor Deal has refused to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. He said that right now, in this election year, between the state capitol and the U.S. capitol and the White House, nobody's really talking to each other. Is this an area where you think, because of your contacts with the Obama administration, that you might be able to help facilitate some sort of third way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up. Nathan Deal is a tremendous person. We literally grew up together in the state legislature, so I work with him. I always kid him when I'm talking to him about him. I say, now, Governor, you got to remember, I knew you when you were a Democrat. And so we get to laughing about that. Nathan understands, and I predict, that Georgia will have a form of the Medicaid option. And here is the key to it. many of our rural communities are right at the abyss. Their hospitals are closing, and they're closing because they can't get the money to operate, and the money for them to operate is in the Medicaid option. Yes, you're right. I will be able to work with the governor and with the White House on this because we've done it before. Look at Kentucky. They went and they simply changed it to KiCare. They changed the name of it. There is this objection to the president. Everybody doesn't like him, doesn't agree with him. So you got a lot of emotion there. But we can skin this cat another way. Let's look at Arkansas. Just as red and just as Republican as Georgia. But they sat down and they understood, I am not going to let my people here go without health care insurance. We'll change the name to Georgia Care. Change it to whatever you want to change it. But more importantly, having a hospital in a community is economic development. What business will want to go into rural Georgia where there's no hospital or where the hospital is closing? My point is, then I urge our Republican friends, I am here to go to work to get the White House to pull together whatever arrangement they need that would fit Georgia. I think as you get around to it and we're able to show where rural hospitals and rural communities, where most of Republican districts are, if those people could properly understand that our hospitals will not close if we can get the Medicaid option. It's a rural Georgia that's being hurt most.
So if other states, including Arkansas, Alabama, Louisiana, yeah, Indiana, have agreed to some sort of arrangement, why hasn't Georgia? Do you think the problem is in the state capital here? Is it with the White House? Where's the roadblock been?
I think the problem is certainly there within Georgia in terms of properly articulating the case for it. They got to get the passion and the emotion out of it and lay out it in a plain, substantive way of what it's going to do for Valdosta. What is this going to do for Albany? What's it going to do for those hospitals? What's it going to do for even places like Ringo or Griffin or Tifton? It's going to do a lot. It's going to be a source of economic development, getting health, creating the jobs, but more importantly, keeping those hospitals open.
Can what you just said, getting the passion out of it, happen this year in an election year?
I think Well, let's see. That's a very interesting point. But it can be done. I think this is a great opportunity for Governor Nathan Deal, who is approaching the end of his term. It should be him providing that leadership. I know him. I know him well. You got to choose the right quarterback at the right time. I think Nathan Deal is that. People like him. He's been a good governor, in my own opinion. He brought great economic development here. I think if he laid out the case to say, hey, what's best for Georgia? Bump Obama. Obama's going to be gone. He's going to be gone in a few months. But Georgia's there. And I think nobody can better articulate Georgia's needs than the governor. And if he puts that talent and skill on looking and examining and taking it around Georgia and saying, here's our need, Georgia. Here is a source of income, Georgia. I'd like to see what we can do to get it into rural hospitals in South Georgia and North Georgia. Governor Nathan Deal has a talent and ability to do that. And it would just make me shine gloriously if I could be a helping hand to Nathan Deal with the White House up here to craft a program that he could sell to Georgia.
This is a completely different area, but you've been concerned about the president's approach to the group calling itself Islamic State. And lately we have seen some gains by Kurds who've taken back some ISIS-held territory. We've also seen the deployment of some American special forces. Have those things eased your concerns any?
No, they really haven't, because ISIS is gaining elsewhere. And because of the longevity that they've been in place, they have various pieces of infrastructure. This is ISIS, it's Al-Qaeda, it's this whole issue of radical Islamic jihadism. That has to be explored. We have got to get more of our Muslim friends. This is a fight for the soul of Islam. The other thing is that we've got to have the killer instinct when it comes to evil. My concern is it's not over there. It's here. It's here in America. And the way we've got to deal with it, we've got to cut the head off the snake, which is in Syria. In order to deal with that, we are going to have to, in my own opinion, move more swiftly, more aggressively. We have the capacity to do so. As you know, I'm a member of the NATO Parliamentary Assembly. This is NATO. And when one nation in NATO is attacked, we all must rally. France has been attacked. Great Britain has been attacked. The United States has been attacked. And we have not coalesced. We're the most powerful nations in the world. And what are we doing? My hope is that we could use Article 5 of the NATO agreement, because these are the countries who are being attacked unnecessarily. And we combine that with a strong alliance and partnership with the Gulf states. And it'd be a great opportunity. You bring in Iran, they're helping us with ISIS, then let's get them on the team. Saudi Arabia helping, let's get them on the team. And maybe getting Saudi Arabia and Iran to work together to get rid of ISIS might bring them closer together and solve what is the fundamental fight in Islam, the Shias and the Sunnis. But to just do a little bit here and a little bit there, and you move here and you want there, and you're being kind of weak with it, that is not it.
Can a massive response by a coalition, though, happen without a major commitment of American ground forces?
We don't need a major commitment of ground forces like in Iraq or Afghanistan. That's not what I am talking about. Here's where we're failing. We don't have coordinated intelligence. We don't even have coordinated places to bomb. I've talked with some of our pilots who have flown missions, and they've come back empty-handed because there's no coordinates. There's nobody on the ground coordinating. We've got to use a smart deployment of our forces. But the whole point of the matter, there is no organized, cohesive effort with Iran and Saudi Arabia and Turkey, Jordan, all of these, largely because of the Shiite-Sunni differentiations between them. What I am saying is that's where our leadership has to come in, is to be able to sit there. I would have loved for a part of the Iranian agreement. Of course, it was not what I wanted it to be. But to have a part in there to say, hey, you're joining in this fight to deal with this. So to your point, I'm not talking about massive ground forces. I'm talking about we are smart, man. President Obama is a tremendous person, a wonderful person. Okay? He's kind and he's decent. But he looks at the world the way he wants the world to be, and that's fine as a transformative person. But now, these boys over there, they take all that kindness, they take all that generosity the president's willing to give them, they take that for weakness, man, unfortunately. And we have got to exert strength, direction. The only people that can lead what I'm talking about is America. And we got to do it from the front, not from the back.
Democratic Georgia Congressman David Scott. Thanks so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Dennis. Take care.